this podcast. After a short break, I'm back again and I have a special episode for you. Today's episode is titled as Domestic Abuse Within a Relationship, When to Get Legal Help. So you can guess perhaps what I'm going to talk about. Yes, today I'm here to talk about domestic abuse, and this episode is dedicated to my audience from UK and all those who need help to leave an abusive partner. And yes, domestic abuse affects all people seriously, no matter which country you are from. So, today you will have some valuable information on how to recognize the signs that you could see in an abusive relationship. You might have heard already that domestic abuse is a shadow pandemic, as declared by UN Women, and in the UK, in the first quarter of 2020, covering the first lockdown, domestic abuse accounted for 52% of total caseload. According to the ONS report, the crime survey for England and Wales showed that an estimated 2.3 million adults aged 16 to 74 years experienced domestic abuse in the last year. There was an increase in demand for domestic abuse victim support services, including a 65% increase in calls and contacts logged by the National Domestic Abuse Helpline between April and June 2020. So, we must know what constitutes domestic abuse and when we need to ask for help when we are the victims of domestic abuse in an intimate relationship. To learn about this, I have invited Karen Cole from Legal Minded Friends. Karen Cole has a Bachelor of Arts in Sociology and Criminology and has been working in one way or another for justice. She started off Legal Minded Friends in 2009, a private business that aims to fill the gap, providing legal support to those that don't want to pay high-hour solicitor invoices and those who do not qualify for legal aid. So let's meet Karen. Karen, how did I do? Do you want to add anything before we get started? Like, I assume Legal Minded Friends is what says on the tin, but why call your business Legal Minded Friends?
Oh my gosh, thanks for that great introduction, and thank you. It is so wonderful of you to ask me to come and speak to your audience. Well, you hit it on the nail. I decided to name my business Legal Minded Friends because now, this is a true story. When I was working for the local government county council on behalf of the county solicitor, I would recover monies owing through a legal process. Citizens' Advice would contact me after people would get the letter before court action from me, and they would say that they had the person in front of them, but they could not afford a solicitor, nor would they qualify for legal aid. They would ask me what they could do, so I was essentially giving legal advice on what kind of evidence I was looking for to either satisfy the debt or secure the debt by way of a county court judgment. Though I was also representing the local authorities, 48 different departments, my work included providing legal advice to the department's finance heads of service so that they could chase an invoice legally, kind of like what CPS would do for the police, as we will discuss in a minute. But essentially, I would give the all good to go before taking legal action. And you can imagine each service had their own way of working. For example, the education department functionally totally different to the fire and rescue service. So I had to learn many areas of business practice for these 48 different departments and to explain to them civil procedure rules. So I thought of myself as a legal-minded friend to both sides. So 12 years ago, I left employed work and decided to start Legal Minded Friends, and now I help businesses and individuals.
So, with legal aid being cut, has this increased the need for your type of service?
Oh yes, over the years, I have helped many litigants in person through the court process as a paid McKenzie friend. There are strict rules to being a McKenzie friend, and I believe that it is an essential option to have a fair legal outcome for those who want justice, but cannot afford a top-notch solicitor. And believe me you, when I worked for the local authority, I would come up against the most talented solicitors and barristers. So with that professional background, the feedback I got from my clients is that I wish I would have known about your service sooner.
Karen, the pandemic was especially hard for those in domestically abused relationship and the reverse of domestic abuse. So, I noticed you post on domestic abuse and violence awareness. Is there any statistics that particularly got your attention?
Absolutely. Understanding statistics is important because when I hear that two women are killed every week from domestic violence and one man every 2 weeks, this is shocking. And an individual will go through approximately 35 abusive incidents before calling the police. This in itself tells me a lot.
Yes, I wonder if victims are aware of the meaning of domestic abuse or if they are too afraid to speak out. And if they so, they are out of time. This would be very devastating. Can you address this area?
Yes, of course. The meaning of domestic abuse or domestic violence is a term that applies to a number of offending behaviors committed. Just this year, there was a petition to abolish the time limits dealing with the six-month rule regarding common assault. And for context, once a petition reaches 10,000 signatures, it triggers a consultation period. This petition got over 64,000 signatures, so Parliament started the consultation process. And this is where professionals and members of the public can have a say. Then members of Parliament debate the findings. And in this case, the conclusion by the Ministry of Justice was that the time limits of 6 months affect common assaults, but there are a range of options available to ensure justice is done, so the 6 month time limit was not abolished. The Domestic Abuse Act 2021, which was implemented from the 1st of October 2021, aims to bring awareness and improve bringing perpetrators to justice. The Act redefined the definition of domestic abuse. The new definition is that domestic abuse is not just a physical offense, and it is also not just one offense. It is a range of offenses, including emotional, economic, and psychological abuse. It is also controlling and coercive behavior, which is not limited to the 6 months rule. So, as there are many options, they felt justice would be served.
So, what should a victim do to get justice?
Well, if we take into consideration that a victim will go through many incidents before calling the police, then it is important to seek help early. My view is that if you are walking on eggshells or going through gaslighting, then it is a sign that you may be in the early stages of domestic abuse.
I think most people understand walking on eggshells, but what is gaslighting?
Well, I'm going to go with Dr. Ramanai's meaning, which is having your emotions and feelings denied.
So what kind of statements would fall into this term gaslighting?
Again, according to Dr. Ramanai, the abuser will start saying statements like, "Stop being so sensitive. That never happened. I think you may be mentally ill. You need help. Why can't you take a joke? Why are you so angry all the time?" Once you hear these kind of statements, this is the time to reach out to a doctor or many of the victim help support organizations. The difficulty is, if a victim hears these kind of negative statements all the time, they will start to internalize the abuse. They will start to feel worthless or even maybe suicidal. Once this happens, your confidence depletes and you will not have the strength to seek legal help. And this is where the argument of 6 month time limit should be abolished, because it takes longer to regain confidence in order to seek legal help.
If a victim cannot talk to friends because they feel embarrassed, What can we do?
This is when legal support is necessary because, as domestic abuse is an offending behavior, the victim will need to tell their story to someone who can provide them with the confidence they need to speak out and seek a remedy through the courts. The police do not make the decisions to charge, they arrest, and it is important to understand this. A great many incidents that are reported to the police may not have the evidence, and the abuser is released on bail until the evidence is investigated. Once the evidence is collected, it is the CPS that makes the decision to charge. These are two distinct steps, and when the evidence is not physical, then the process takes time. Sadly, a lot of couples get back together during this delay, and the victim may no longer want to be a witness.
What do you think about Claire's Law?
Yes, this is the Right to Know and Right to Ask scheme. On my YouTube and Instagram channel, I have signposted how individuals can apply for historical information to see if there is a history of domestic abuse. The benefit of this is that it is recorded, all the arrests without charge and charges. And let's say if the history did not result in a charge, then if a recent case does have evidence, this may trigger CPS to revisit the released without charge cases, and they could decide to retry the perpetrator. So reporting, even if the victim does not have the evidence, it could be instrumental to a prosecution in the future.
What should a person do if they find out there is a history?
This is why I think taking action from a position of strength will benefit. If there are signs that we talked about, and there is a history, if the couple want to work on the relationship, then they need professional counseling. The idea is to break the cycle of abuse.
In your practice, is there a common theme that you hear victims tell you?
I have noticed common themes when taking statements from victims and individuals accused of domestic abuse. Victims tell me they do not know what they are doing wrong. They are always trying to please the other person. They feel they would not be believed if they told anyone, as the accused abuser is so charming around other people. Those being accused of abuse tend to divert blame. They say they should be able to do what they want without being nagged, and the abuse they are being accused of is being over-exaggerated. After a while, these feelings and behaviors become more intense for both sides to a breaking point. If you want to see this kind of behavior in real life, let me tell you about a recent case in America. Sadly, it illustrates the common themes I have heard from both sides. I think this is why it's become a worldwide case for analyzing. So this is Gabby Petita. She and her fiancé Brian Laundrie decided to travel America, capturing their journey on her YouTube channel. Soon, she has thousands of followers, and while they are visiting a town, they are spotted arguing and fighting in the street. A concerned member of the public reported it to the police. Two police patrol officers could see the couple's van driving out of town, so they pulled them over and questioned both of them. The police have released their body cam footage, and it is worth seeing. When I saw the police body cam, I thought to myself, this is the behavior of a relationship that has reached breaking point. I could see the same patterns that I have observed in client statements. Here are some of the red flags I saw when they were interviewed by the police. Gabby is clearly distressed, blames herself for being a clean freak. She feels he is not supportive of her YouTube channel and the time it takes to create her posts. She feels he does not believe in her or her dreams of being a YouTuber. Brian is telling them that she was upset with him for having dirty feet in the van. This started a fight, and afraid she would drive off without him, he took the keys to the van, locked her out, and told her to go for a walk and calm down. So he was defending his actions as justified. Though, the 911 caller said they witnessed Brian hitting Gabby, so he was minimizing his behavior when talking to the police. This case does not end well. Let me just give you a quick ending. First, Gabby goes missing after they were pulled over by the police. Brian returns home without her. Brian lawyers up and goes camping with his family. Then he decides to go camping on his own in a remote area. Weeks later, Gabby is found murdered. Estimated time of death was before he got home to go camping. The FBI searched several weeks for Brian, and they just found him dead. So what happened? Hopefully we will find out the truth. So what are the lessons learned? If you want to know more about what behaviors are characteristic of a perpetrator, I recommend you watch Dr. Grande. He has done a superb YouTube video on this case. He also discusses the traits of domestic abuse and what signs to look out for. We here are very lucky in the UK. There are dedicated teams of police officers just for domestic abuse victims. But the justice system cannot protect a victim if the victim does not speak out against the abuser.
Does the justice system in UK protect abusers by the way it is set up?
Ooh, that is a very good question. I remember in one of my law classes dealing with legal ethics that knowledge of the law is essential, but the law should be fair and seek truth. There is the saying from, I believe, 1769, a doctrine that basically says it is better 10 guilty persons go free than one innocent man be convicted. And to be more woke, we could easily change this to be gender neutral.
So evidence plays a large part in getting justice.
Yes, for example, to seek a non-molestation order, this is done in the family courts. The new Domestic Abuse Act 2021 clarifies that it does not matter whether the behavior consists of a single incident or a course of conduct. Also, evidence can include, for example, calls to police, as they are recorded, and if the abuser is heard in the background being abusive, this forms strong additional evidence to enable the courts to sentence appropriately.
What happens, for example, if a victim gets a non-molestation order and the abuser breaches the order?
Yes, the orders place specific conditions on the abuser. If broken, it becomes a criminal offense, which is very serious.
Thank you so much, Karen. Since we are talking about domestic abuse, can you give some examples of behavior that would meet the criteria for a non-molestation application?
These are very complicated applications in the sense that the victim should get legal support. But think of these applications as restraining the perpetrator from the behavior that is causing the victim to be frightened to the point they do not feel safe, and it is affecting their health and everyday life.
Okay, so I'm starting to understand the 6 months time limit. Do you want to add anything?
Legal advice is needed because there are behaviors that will have a longer reporting allowance.
I think we can do an Instagram live on this so that our audience can talk to you directly and ask you about domestic abuse issues. I think many of us can relate to this discussion to our personal life, as I came to know from UN Women that even before this pandemic, 1 in 3 women experienced domestic abuse in their lifetime.
Well, thank you. And I think the more understanding, the better, as it really is about each personal situation. And the more people know, the more they are likely to report it. Like in the American case mentioned, awareness is the key.
All right, I would like to mention the key points of this discussion. Firstly, we must identify the abuse and ask someone for legal help. Secondly, under the Clear's Law or Domestic Violence Disclosure Scheme, anyone has the right to ask the police if their partner may pose a risk to them. Finally, evidence plays a large part in getting justice. If you want to get in touch with Karen, please check out the episode details where I have left her website and Instagram links. You will also find more links there for more details on the topics discussed today. Thank you for listening to today's episode, and I believe whether you are a victim or not, you will feel empowered after getting the valuable information from Karen. Also, you can help victims of abuse as you know what domestic abuse looks like and when to ask for legal help. Don't forget to follow and subscribe to my podcast. Feel free to share this episode with your friends and family members. You can also watch this episode on my YouTube channel. Please find the link in episode details. Stay tuned and raise your voice against injustice anywhere.